On the podcast today, we are going to speak about the bliss state of consciousness that is fundamental to our being. And this is knowledge that we discover in Hinduism, Buddhism, and Taoism. Now, a lot of you may know this as Ananda in Sanskrit. And Lao Tzu also talks about this in the Tao Te Ching, where he explains the contentment of contentment. And this is this fundamental state of unassociated bliss. This is very important to understand, unassociated. And so this is like the what we would call true happiness. So it's not associated with anything in the external world. It's a state of consciousness that arises from within us. And we first discover this sort of knowledge in the Upanishads, where we have Sat Chit Ananda. So Sat being true beingness, or the truth, the fundamental truth of existence. And Chit being pure consciousness, and Ananda being bliss. Now, a lot of people may know of this knowledge through the mythologist Joseph Campbell. And Joseph explained that, you know, very honestly, he didn't know Sat or didn't know much about Chit, but he knew how to follow his bliss. Mm-hmm. Now, that's interesting because that's kind of the truth to it, following your bliss, but it's a much more deeper philosophy than that, because Ananda is a fundamental state of consciousness that we all experience, that's inherent to all of our existence. Yes. You know what I mean? So, and this is very important because, you know, a lot of people are, especially in this day and age, want to know how to experience true happiness and how to be happy, but their happiness is so dependent on their external circumstances, their life situation, and they don't know how to have this joyfulness that, you know, that a master, a spiritual master or a sage, you know, exudes.
The true sense of happiness or pure sense of joyfulness became very scarce in this day and age, I think, because our life became much, much faster and busier, and we have literally have no time to do anything really. Mm. So that, but at the same time, we all want to be happy.
Yeah.
And how do we find that happiness? That's the biggest question for everyone nowadays.
Well, the problem is that in a busy life, they're trying to find happiness with external circumstances. And though that may alleviate, you know, certain terrible situations for yourself on a personal level, that's not going to give you what we're talking about, like the Ananda, the bliss. It's not going to give you that ultimate contentment of contentment. It may give you contentment, but not the contentment of contentment, you know. Obviously, we support anyone who's trying to change their situation into a positive situation. Like, no one would argue with that, right? But in the end of the day, sometimes even when we do get a favorable situation, we realize that we're still as unhappy as we were before, even though the circumstances have changed. And that's the importance of this Ananda philosophy.
Yeah, that's right. It's interesting that we change our situation and circumstance at time to give a change in life, right? Mm-hmm. But then once you make the change, and when you get used to that change, then back to kind of normal, right? Yeah. You've experienced suffering from the similar feeling. Mm-hmm. It could be a completely different situation, but mm-hmm. the same kind of feeling and emotion will arise, and you will experience same kind of suffering or pain as you were before, right? Mm.
Well, that's what they talk about in cognitive science. They talk about this a bit in Taoism, where you have the foreground, and in the foreground, what was the foreground for you once upon a time slowly becomes a background. So if it was for you to focus on getting to a certain life situation and you got there, once you got there, the mind's ability to adapt to new circumstances and this and that, then it becomes background noise and you lose appreciation of what was the focus in the first place. And this is where Ananda is important, because if you're in contact with that bliss, then it's always fresh. It's always new to you. It's not a drag for you. It doesn't become like background noise and then you've lost contact with it. And this is all comes down to how we experience happiness, in air quotes, and that's usually through our personality, through our jiva. And so what happens through our personality and through our jiva is we have associated happiness. So our happiness is dependent on what's going to happen out here. dependent on the relationships we have, dependent on where we live, depending on, you know, the political situation at the current time or whatever.
Depend on certain food that you like to have from certain restaurants.
Yes.
And all this type of little things, yeah.
And so that shows then that actually at its core, the jiva is very insecure because it always needs circumstances of life to be cultivated or to be presented in just the way it likes.
Mm.
And this is where it's very problematic, right? Because once you don't have the circumstances you want or the life situations you desire, then all things fall apart. And this is where ananda is very important, because ananda is unassociated bliss. It means that you that it's coming from within you. You are naturally happy. I remember Muji once said, someone said to Muji about, you know, how come you seem very happy and joyful all the time? Like, why is that? And they also said, I saw someone the other day, they elaborated on it, and their face looked very stern, but then when they went over to see how they were, they said, no, I'm joyful. I'm just, you know, it's just my facial appearance. And so it's like what Muji and explaining that other individual's experience is that the joy is there. It doesn't need, even if the face is looking like this, like this pure joy inside.
So not necessarily the how we imagine to be happy, just smiling on the face all the time and having a good laugh all the time.
No.
That doesn't necessarily always mean that you're happy, right?
No.
And I find it this nowadays is that in society the people are put on smile and laughter all the time in a sense that to cover their own, I don't know, like a gloomy emotional state or something like that nowadays, just to cover and to kind of faking it a little bit.
No, that's true. And that's what the jiva does, the personality does, the ego does. It does that to protect itself from, you know, being exposed to its inherent sadness, its inherent lack of bliss. And that's a good point, because you see a lot of people these days that you might walk past the coffee shop and everyone's laughing and giggling and this and that, but then in their private life they're not happy, truly happy. And we've heard this a lot in monasteries and temples with teachers explaining this, you know, especially in relation to the monkey mind, because the monkey mind's always seeking pleasure and desires and you know, wanting to fill its existence up, you know, full of stimuli to think that it's happy. But what you need to actually come back into accord with is this unassociated happiness. And so the irony is that we can't experience ananda through the personality. And that's what's important.
That's why this term satchit ananda is important, I think.
Yep.
And not just the knowing words, obviously you need to understand what it really means, right? So to be able to experience that pure bliss, unassociated bliss, the ananda state, is to know sat and chit.
Yep.
I think.
Yep.
Again, sat means pure being, pure existence. And
Brahman.
chit is pure consciousness, pure awareness, or pure knowledge, or something like that, right? So those two elements has to come together to be able to experience ananda, right?
Exactly.
And again, that comes in your like a sadhana, spiritual discipline or training, and it can only be experienced to know what really is, right? Not just talk about it or read about it or being around the great teachers or something like that. It has to be experienced firsthand once you understand the sat and chit, right? And, well, for us personally, that we experience this state of bliss a lot when we are in India, you know, great places where great masters and teachers have been gone through in the past, and when you are around their presence, and also when you do your sadhana as well, like a deep meditation, and the deep meditation when there is nothing bothers you anymore. Nothing really touches your emotion. So there is no like that ripple anymore. Is it completely? When it's completely calm, that you experience that just the pure joy, pure happiness, just arise within you. That it comes to you and arise within you. So it's almost like understanding sat and chit, and having that sadhana. All that process itself is to cleanse out your jiva state of mind, so that you allow that pure bliss will reveal itself within yourself, right? That's the process that we all need to go through.
Yeah. Well, that ananda is, like you're saying, is the effect. It's kind of like the side effect of knowing Brahman. And like you said, settling the ripples of the mind, the vrittis, the whirlpools of the mind. So then you have an experience of chit, of pure consciousness, right? And once you have pure consciousness, you can see right into the nature of your mind, the sat, the truth. It's always there. And ananda's always there too. But the problem is that the jiva weighs, is a weight, it's heavy. So we all feel the personality in our mind, and it's a heavy weight because it's an accumulated sense of, it's an accumulated sense of self, of all knowledge of experience, education, and culture, and everything, you know, that all build up in your samskaras, your subconscious, which become your vasanas and your karma, your habitual tendencies and your actions and unconscious actions. And then it's a weight. And as you're alluding to, when you do sadhana and spiritual practice, you're starting to sort of clean the basement out. You start to get a bit lighter. The jiva is getting lighter and lighter and lighter. And then you naturally feel like, what? Like the joy is arising without, you know, seeking it, without, you know, searching something to be happy. You've naturally you're throwing the weight out of your mind, which is the jiva.
The process of that is, I think, you are rediscovering your own innocence within yourself, I think.
Yeah.
Because the jiva, like you said, accumulated sense of I, which is ego, that is the combination of your education. And so entirely your kind of identity, identity that you have in the society as a person, right? And that identity comes in with a lot of other baggage.
Yep.
That pollutes your mind and it makes you kind of lose your sense of innocence. That so that it's literally heavy, and we all know that it drags us down right to the ground. It's that heavy.
Yeah.
So that process of realizing that pure being and pure awareness and consciousness is that to, again, like clean it, like you shovel the soil out, the dirty soil out. Yeah, so it's lighten up.
Yep.
So that once you get rid of all that baggage and bondage and this conditioned identity, then it becomes lighter and lighter. And the bottom of your being is the pure awareness, pure being, which is a pure innocence. That innocence let that blissful state shine through through your own being, so that you get to experience that pure happiness, that unassociated bliss.
See, when you're brought into this world, right, your awareness is constantly, your awareness from the get-go is entangled with the external world. And it's not by actually your own doing in some sense, because in some sense, you know, when we're brought into the world, we need to know certain things, you know, to avoid and blah, blah, blah. But as Zhuangzi would say, this develops the this and that mentality, which then starts to, you know, build this accumulated sense of self, the jiva. So your awareness, your pure awareness, your chit, you're always chit, mind you. You're always chit, right? You're always pure consciousness. But it gets entangled with the external world. And then, as Patanjali says, that then you start to feel the gravitational pull of the external world. So it's always pulling you here and there, and, oh, yeah, that new car, you know. You know, I know I got that mortgage for the new house, love, but I think, you know, there's this external pull, and it's dragging you out. It's taking the awareness out of you and kind of molesting your awareness, right? And this is what Patanjali is talking about. It's this gravitational pull. And so in saying that, like, so the jiva then, when after that process happens, the jiva fully depends on prakriti, depends on all of the nature and energy of the world, as opposed to purusha, right? Because purusha is pure awareness. And as we know in yoga and Sankhya philosophy, there's this constant game between prakriti and purusha. Or if we look, use the Vedantic terms, maya, right? There's the illusion of maya is always tricking you into playing along, you know, playing its game. And so then what happens is the jiva then depends fully on the external world. And because your awareness has been molested, then in this process you've accumulated a sense of self, you know.
Yeah, again, like you said, that your sense of consciousness and being always entangled with the external world. And once you give attention outwardly like that, then they're like you said, oh, just got a new mortgage for a new house, but then this car looks pretty good. It'll serve me really well for my family and whatnot. And yeah, so once you get dragged to that world, then more and more these things repeat itself.
Yep.
Then the external world comes back to you to create this concrete and false idea of who you think you are, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's an ebb and flow. Your attention go out and the outside world comes back to you and create the concrete idea of your identity.
Yeah.
And that's, again, that's temptation of maya. That's prakriti, isn't it?
Yeah, that is. And as I heard once a sadhu say, someone asked the sadhu, how do we like escape samsara? How do we escape this life and this cycle of life and birth, being molested by maya and prakriti? How do we avoid this? And the sadhu said, just turn away from samsara. And what he meant in turning away was twofold. It was stop paying attention to the noise in the external world and what people believe is important, and instead of focusing on that, focus on the internal world, on yourself, and understand the knowledge at a deeper level. So to understand Ananda, right, you have to understand that reality is non-dual.
Yeah.
There's no, and we're talking here about the schools of Vedanta, Buddhism, particularly Mahayana Buddhism, and also Taoism. And so from that perspective, there's no distance between you and Brahman. Brahman is already ever-present within you. It's an eternal reality. It's non-dual. It's a one reality. There's no distance. But we're always searching. We search for this. We search for Brahman or for the Atman within us, enlightenment, because we're under the habit of our awareness being entangled in the external world. And what happens when you're in the external world? You're always searching for things. You're searching for the next, you know, as Buddha said, you know, craving, the end of craving is what and what he means there is the end of searching, end of seeking. Because there's no distance between you and the ultimate reality,
right.
Brahman or Tao or Dharmakaya, whatever you want to call it. There's no distance between that. And we're under this hypnosis of searching and seeking for this sort of reality.
Again, it's very difficult state to get to, but in a sense that, like it's somewhat like you need to kind of indifferent to outside world a little bit.
Yep.
You know it's there, and you know it exists, and it will try to get your attention. And it'll try as best as it can, right, to get your attention. But, okay, so you accept that the world exists, right? But somewhat you put in kind of a ignorant eye to it. Like you don't react, you are indifferent to it, right? And then you every time when that sort of temptation kicks in, yeah, you kind of push it away for a little bit, and then you choose to look within, right? Like, do I really need it, or that's just my the unnecessary desire playing its game, so you just walk away from it. Like you said, that sadhu said, like, don't look to that samsara. Look the other way.
Look the other way, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's an important point, because who's to say you should focus on all these things in the external world?
You choose it.
You choose.
Yeah.
And you allow other people to enforce that on you, that mentality, because they themselves are a victim of the same hypnosis. So you're listening to people who are a victim of the same hypnosis of thinking that everything out here is the way it is, but their awareness is also entangled in the external world as well. I mean, there's not many sages out there, right? There's not many sadhus. So it's hard to gain access to this sort of knowledge. But I always say this to people, because when people, you know, a lot of problems people have that I've encountered through email and through social media and everything and that, is that they believe in Eastern philosophy and Eastern spirituality, but the last thing they can't get over is kind of their mentality of trying to save the world and have an opinion and this and that. Usually Westerners, let me be frank. But I always say to them, who's to say that's the right mentality? Who has told you that?
Mm.
You know, have you examined the people who are promoting that? Have you examined their lives? How peaceful are they? Are they very opinionated people? Are they trustworthy people? And we can say in general, no, because once your awareness is commingled with the external world, things like self-interest, self-preservation, and all of these things start to become prevalent in the consciousness. When before that, shanti, your pure bliss, pure ananda, what's happening out here is happening out here. Like the sadhu on the street in Delhi, there's chaos going around and he's sitting there, abhaya mudra. Nothing's, everything's okay. These people are all possessed by the same bad habit of looking into the external world and trying to gain something from it, but it's all based on this accumulated sense of self, the jiva. And they just don't know that.
Mm.
They just don't know that.
Yeah, to be able to gain that state of mind which sadhu reside in is for us to also have that heightened state of perception of the world as well, I think. We often get lost in a certain situation or circumstance where, like, there's too many options, for example, because it's too confused and we, like, start overthinking and start overanalyzing and we end up, like, sometimes often the case that we don't come up with any conclusion or any, like, a decision that you needed to come up with, right? And that's when we get caught too much into the detail and, I don't know, maybe often the case they're not that necessary either.
No.
So when we are in a situation like that, I think we somewhat need to, like, take a breath and keep ourselves in a bit, like, a heightened state of perception. Because in the end, overthinking, overanalyzing is not necessary. But we realize it much, much more, much later, right?
Mm-hmm.
But in the end, like, having the higher state of perception will help you to just make a decision, and whatever happens later, you just deal with it, kind of thing, instead of being too overly confused and overly getting complicated by the whole situation. More we get into that sort of state of mind, things become more complicated, we get stressed, right? And that happens pretty much everyone's life. But whereas if we were to just have a more relaxed attitude in that kind of circumstance, that whatever, in the end, as we know, we do this way, we do that way, it's actually the same. So either way, in that at that moment, whatever you think it feels more appeal, you just go for it. And whatever happens in consequence, you just deal with it, kind of thing. So having a bit of a higher state of perception will help you to have a bit more, like, laid back and more relaxed attitude, which will enhance your decision to make the right decision in the end.
Chuang Tzu's free and easy wandering, right? Like, not just being chill and not over reacting to situations. You know, the jiva, for example, its habit, because it's commingled with the external world, is it tends to overreact to certain situations. And then what does the Zen master say? We'll see. You don't really know. You think that that's the way it is. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
You know, and we're constantly in this bad habit, like you said, because we don't have this elevated perception of we'll see. We're right involved in the reality. And we're like, oh, like this has to be corrected, or, you know, we have to fight for our rights here and so forth and so on. And the Zen master's still on top of the mountain saying, we'll see how it plays out. You don't know. It could play out this way. It could play out that way. And if you're on the spiritual path, you're trying not to get involved. You're trying to get your, as you were mentioning, your perception to evolve to see the panorama.
Bigger picture.
The bigger picture. Mm. Instead of seeing the detail of the picture, and like you're looking at the art like this with your magnifying glass, you need to stand back and look at the whole picture. That's the path for anyone who's sincere in spirituality.
Mm.
And actually from that state, you're blissful, right? Because your mind is not molested by the external circumstances, by certain situations and places in the world, and, you know, the turmoil that apparently is always there, right?
It almost seems like Maya and Prakriti, that world always there, and their role is to always get your attention.
Yeah. And dangling the carrot.
Yeah, exactly. It throw you so many options and temptations right in front of you and get you really confused and like really get stressed out about, you know, what to do, you know.
Yeah.
But then our role in that situation is to step back and not to react.
Yeah. In this particular vessel that everyone listening and watching and you and I now, in this particular vessel that we have, this body-mind matrix that we're embodied at this present moment, why not seek joy? Why be involved in so many things that are going to cause you unhappiness? And this and that, you know, if you look at a lot of people these days, they think they only have one life, right? So they say, use this life well. And that's actually a pretty good mentality, because if you're thinking in that way, then you think, well, what do I want? Well, I want to be joyful. I want to be happy. And then I don't want to actually be angry and frustrated at anyone in general, right? But what happens is if you're not taking the inward journey, then it's easy to get your mind, you know, caught in this matrix, you know, in Prakriti and Maya. And then once your mind is caught in them, it's hard to pull the brakes and pull your awareness out of it.
Mm.
Only with like sincere self-study and spiritual practice can you do that.
Mm.
And that's important for everyone who's listening and watching, because we don't need more people involved in the matrix and getting their mind co-mingled in it. We need less. We need more people becoming, you know, aware of their true nature, experiencing the state of ananda and bliss, you know, like, so what?
It's almost like we know the answer already, like you said. We want to be happy, of course. We want to stay stress-free.
Yeah.
We want to be blissed out all the time.
Mm.
But why do we not do it?
Yeah.
It's pretty simple in the end. Because my mind tend to be lazy, right? And to ignore all these temptation, you need to put certain amount of effort not to get drawn to that, right?
Mm.
But again, since we know the answer that we all want, why don't we just give a bit of effort and keep the mind not lazy so that in the end we can walk out into that blissful state, right?
Why waste time on things that are insignificant and things that you can't actually change? You know, a lot of people waste time on that. They waste time on political situations. They waste time on social, you know, turmoil. And these are sometimes things that you can't change and you can't even influence and have a bearing on. But what you can do is you can engage fully in the spiritual exploration.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd even say not even a bit of effort. I would say that your whole life, should be consumed with this.
Right.
Because, first of all, your pure nature is ananda, is bliss. Why do you not want to access that? Why do you want to be... You're holding on to anger. You're holding on to frustration. Release. Let go of that. You know, it's exhausting to hold on to anger and a grudge and everything. This is what the jiva does, right? The jiva is like a magnet. It just holds on to certain emotional traits and doesn't want to let go of them because it doesn't feel comfortable in the mind's nature, which is free and spontaneous. It's empty, free and spontaneous is the nature of the mind. It doesn't feel comfortable in that because the jiva is a solidified state in the mind. It's like a rock that you've developed in your mind. And, you know, spiritual practice and this and that is like spiritual solvent to kind of thin it, acid, you know, thin that rock out, you know. Mm-hmm. So I would say, why not engage in it? You know, because it's your nature. What's more important than experiencing bliss in this life and being free and liberated in this life? Experiencing moksha. You know, some people don't believe it. But you know why they don't believe it? Because they never engaged in any spiritual practice or don't understand the knowledge. You know?
Yeah.
It's hard to be skeptical about something if you've never actually done the work and engaged in it.
Yeah, well, that's it. You need to have an experience to have an opinion on it.
Yeah,
right?
Of course, yeah.
But we often don't do that. So, before we make up certain idea of something, we need to dive deeply into it
and yes.
then see what happens, really.
Yes. And in talking about experience, we have to mention too, is that ananda is our nature, right? And see, the habit we're in, the jiva is trying to get happiness, have experiences, battle good, as we were mentioning, like, oh, yeah, that's a thing I want to fight for. And it doesn't matter what it is. It's constantly addicted to experiencing, you see? And so ananda is non-experiential because it's just your nature. It's pure awareness. Pure awareness is non-experiential as well because it's your state. It's like the turiya in Vedanta. It's the fourth state of consciousness, which is non-experiential. And this is related to, you know, obviously enlightenment. You know, I put out a video a few weeks ago about psychedelics and soma in the Rig Veda. And some people assume that enlightenment is an experience because they have certain states of consciousness and psychedelics through psychedelics. But as we know through Eastern philosophy, enlightenment is non-experiential. It's something that's just there. It's not an experience. It's not like you jump on a roller coaster and go
as an event.
Yeah, it's not an event. Mm. Like we're going to a football match, or you and I are excited to go to the local fair or something like this. You know, it's innately there. It's just there, and so it's your nature. It's non-experiential. And the reason for that is, and why enlightenment is like that, is because Brahman itself is undifferentiated. So Brahman ultimately is Naguna Brahman, right? Without qualities. So it doesn't have qualities. So Guna Brahman is like another level, right? That's with qualities. It's, you know, still there's things in the mind and it's
still like to engage.
Yeah, it's still this life, right? Mm-hmm. So like if we look at Brahman from a totality, everything is Brahman, right? Even Maya is Brahman.
Yeah.
So the Prakriti and everything like this is all Saguna Brahman, right? But Naguna Brahman is that without qualities. It's like, it's similar to the Wu Ji in Taoism, which is what we would say is Tao and stillness, where Tai Chi is Tao and motion.
Right.
You know, so Naguna, especially in Vedanta, Naguna Brahman is where you experience this. I mean, there's no experience. Mm-hmm. It's beyond experience. All experiencing, see? And experiencing, the irony is experiencing is through the jiva, do you see? So when we go through this, when we apply Vedanta, for example, because Vedanta is the spiritual science, we apply to the jiva, right? When we apply Vedanta to the jiva, we go through the process of the dissolution of the jiva, of the ego.
Mm.
And then once we begin to dissolve that, Ananda is there, Brahman is there, Atman is there. It's all there. Sat is there, Chit is there. It was always there, but you had this like weight and covering over the gem that was within you.
we just, for some reason, we like to keep masking over that Sat Chit Ananda with Jiva.
I remember someone asked Swami Sarvapriyananda once, and Swamiji was very blunt, was that you're addicted to experiencing. That's the problem. They admitted that they were addicted to experiencing. They wanted to experience everything. And you can say that's innocent. There's nothing wrong with that. And tantricas and people who follow those sorts of paths would actually say that's a good thing. And, you know, you want to experience life. And I don't argue with that either. But when we're talking about this super deep level, then it's non-experiential. And you almost have to get out of that bad habit of your jiva being so attracted to, you know, experiencing itself. And actually, sorry, love, when you begin to dissolve that, then it doesn't, that natural tendency to experience disappears.
So we are addicted to experiencing. I like that because we always seek something.
Yep.
That what we are seeking is the experience of pleasure.
Pleasure, yeah.
Whatever kind of pleasure it is, you could be having some delicious food or, like you said, going out in a local fair and having fun and all that. Yeah, again, experiencing all these things, nothing wrong with it. Mm. But the problem is that we get addicted to that, right? So that we always seek for what's next, some dessert that we can have, what's next, some nice place that we can go. And we're addicted to that experience. Then, like you said, once we turn away from that addicted state, then that addiction actually, like you just said, slowly dissolves itself.
Yeah,
I think that's a very important thing. I think a lot of people will stop. Let's stop seeking. Let's stop thinking about it.
Mm.
Yeah, that can help. But in the end, what can completely solve the problem is once you turn the attention away from it and turn it into within yourself. And once you put work in to reveal your pure being and consciousness, and that blissful state, the pure bliss will just arise within you. And once it happens, that seeking process will just naturally go away.
Yeah. Well, Ananda becomes your center of gravity then.
Yeah.
I mean, why would you seek? Why would you want to experience? Because you're already, what you were trying to attain through seeking and experiencing, you already have become.
That's right.
Well, you already are, but you've realized.
Like with any addiction, there is a danger to it, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And that's what it is. I think once you keep getting your attention outwardly, then that's what happens. That the danger is to lose sight of who you really are and lose sight of experiencing then pure bliss, unassociated bliss.
Yes.
Again, the bliss is unassociated, not associated with any kind of experience or an object or idea or anything. It's just there. It's always there, ever present. It's ever present only, and it waits there for us to experience and reveal and allow it to just appear within our own being.
Exactly. And the addiction to experiencing is something a lot of people don't understand, don't know. It's not spoken about, but that's what Eastern philosophy do, right? They speak about the taboo or the never thought about. And so that's what we talk about a lot on this podcast.
I think when people don't experience this pleasurable things, then people feel that empty feeling, I think.
Mm.
Because they've always been filling their time with the full of things, activities and going out with friends and all these things. So that once you kind of start thinking that you need to get rid of all these things and do some different kind of, completely different kind of work, then like people would instantly feel, have that reaction of, I don't know, being feeling that emptiness, right? Like, boredom, right? All these things kick in. But again, once we turned our attention to something completely different, then that emptiness will be filled with that, like,
joy.
Yeah, immense, that unlimited, the infinite amount of joy, isn't it?
Yeah, endless. And boredom is something that's easily to work through, actually. We run away from boredom because it's an uncomfortable feeling. And all boredom is a sensation that happens when you've turned off of constant experiencing. So you've turned, most people don't turn it off intentionally, but there's no more experiencing happening, and their mind is accustomed to just, you know, like you said, you go and do this, and then you go and eat this thing, and, you know, and don't get me wrong, some people are addicted to negative experiencing too, like trolls online, right? They live in negativity. That's their experiencing.
Yeah.
There's different types of experiencing, but boredom arises when you turn the tap off, and it's like, you know, when you turn the ceiling fan off, and there's still a bit of juice left.
Yeah.
All you got to do is sit with that for a while, and get comfortable with that sensation. And what, as you mentioned, the bliss arises. It doesn't arise; it's there, really. It just it's kind of revealed. You know,
it's for you to discover it
exactly. And that's why, especially in Hinduism, Buddhism, and Taoism, when we look at, you know, the sages and the sadhus and the masters of all of these traditions, they live a very austere life, a very simple life for that reason. People think that they are actively living a simple life. No, no, no. They've realized something. They're not. And because they've realized what we are talking about, they are not attracted to materialism. They are not attracted to big bank accounts and things like this.
Yeah.
You and I live a very simple life because of this knowledge, and we have for over a decade. You know, we don't have much. And so that's an effect. It's not you're not outwardly going out and doing it. I'm going to live a simple life now. I'm just going to sell everything. You know, there's this whole minimalist lifestyle thing that people do now, but it doesn't usually last for a lot of people because the experiencing mind starts to kick in. It's like, you know what, that the Tesla, it's still minimalist, isn't it, if I buy a Tesla car?
Okay.
Yeah, you know what I mean? So it's a whole different mentality, see? Like the sage and the spiritual master are not trying to be minimalist. They're not. It just happens because they have discovered this. And what else do you need? You are one with Brahman and Tao. You don't need. What do you need? What could anyone give you? Hey man, here's a house, here's a $5 billion, and no, I'm Shanti. I'm all good.
Yeah.
What? How can I use this? I probably just give it to, you know, some donation, to donate to somebody, you know, so.
Yeah. I often think that, you know, like people, we don't own a car, and people say like, isn't it so inconvenient if you don't have a car? Like, yeah, sometimes, but it seems to me, there's more inconvenience from having a car. Like, it's...
Yeah, I've had one. Nightmare.
Yeah. So that's just a simple example. Like, again, like, the reason why the... Especially Buddhist monks, and again, the sadhus the same, that is that they try to keep as less possession as they could own, right? Because we know this, more possession you have, more pressure and more things come along, like, right? Let's say, car, for example. Like, anywhere you go, you need to find a parking place, parking space.
Yes.
You need to pay parking fees. And insurance comes along, and every 6 months or so, you need to check up and all these things. And you need to clean every now and then. But if you don't have that possession, you don't have to worry about any of it.
how all of that anxiety and stress is gone.
Gone. It's then you realize how unnecessary it was, right? Yeah. So that having less possession is much, it frees your mind much more. So again, it's not rocket science. It's so simple.
So simple. Mm. And not just even material possessions, it's also psychological possessions. So being possessed by the news and being possessed by... And so once you turn away, as society mentioned, turning away from samsara includes turning away from the possessions, turning away from the psychological possessions. You're so free. People who are always watching the news and this and that are so influenced and live in a completely, like, deluded world.
Yeah.
It's not the real world. People often say, when talking about Eastern spirituality, but this is the way the world is. And when you look at it from the actual way the world is Brahman. Mm. This is the way the world is. You think it's that way, but you are under the illusion and spell of Maya.
100%.
100%. And so we all have that ananda at our base. When we understand that it's the spell of Maya that's confusing your reality, is essentially possessing you.
Pretty much. It owns you.
It owns you, yeah. So work through that and come back to understand that in truth, the world is non-dual. Truth is Brahman, Tao, Dharmakaya. And that's all there is to talk about it. So, guys, we hope you enjoyed and we'll see you guys next time.